guys, and welcome to the first episode of Season 3 of Taste of Premier. I'm really excited to kick this season off talking about Azure. Azure is one of our cloud platforms, and I've got some great technical gurus to talk to you guys about that, I've got cloud delivery specialist Ryan Barry. Ryan, say hello.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And I have Principal Application Development Manager and awesome drummer, Reed Robison.
Thanks. Happy to be here, Lex.
Yep. Reed and I are actually in a band together, and he, in fact, is an awesome drummer. I don't want to freak anybody out, but I shaved. That may or may not last, but just in case you miss the old Lex, here you go. This is what it used to look like. So how you guys doing?
Doing well.
Excellent. Excited. There's a lot of good stuff going on with Azure. It's going to be a very exciting year at Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And not just with Azure, right? We've got so many things going on. We've got Windows 8.1 about to release, and we're going to do a show on that later. And we have lots of different cloud offerings. Today, though, we're going to stick to Azure. So just tell me what Azure is, right? If I'm out there and I'm looking at Microsoft's cloud service offerings, I'll see, you know, Azure on some of the websites. And so for somebody that doesn't know what that is, how do you explain exactly what Azure is?
Sure. So it's really a great deal number of different bits and technologies. My son really likes to play Legos. I look at it as a big tub of Lego blocks, and you can synthesize together into some creative, you know, solution, line of business application, or customer facing application, and so forth. There's a lot of different ways in which you can use it to do some of the, you know, host and maintain some of those workloads, and maybe kind of kick things off with a couple of pieces of nomenclature you may have heard and may or may not be familiar with, specifically infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. So Azure really grew its roots in the platform as a service space to allow you to build and deploy applications, you know, fundamentally that the administrative footprint of a solution that you would deploy into Azure in that model is minimalist. You basically are just responsible for building applications in Visual Studio, making use of some relational data store to be able to store login information or catalog information or whatever else is needed to make your application work, and you quite simply deploy it in a number of different ways, either through Visual Studio or, you know, in an automated fashion using PowerShell. And that's really where Azure grew its roots. So, you know, fast forward to the April-ish timeframe when we actually made available infrastructure as a service capability, or generally available, that is. It was available in preview status prior to that. But basically, it allows you to take a virtual machine and run it in Azure, and surrounding that virtual machine, there's some capabilities to allow you to extend your on-premises network into Azure and be able to interact with those virtual machines as if they were running in your own data center. You can deploy whatever application components to those virtual machines to be able to allow you to leverage third-party middleware bits or even non-Microsoft line of business type applications that your organization may need to use. And then there's customers that are making use of what we call hybrid scenarios, where they're actually making use of multiple variations of those components. Maybe they have some line of business middleware component that needs to run in its own virtual machine, and they have an application that talks to that. They might have databases that are stored on premises that need to provide or feed data into an application running in Azure. So we have kind of this triangle, trifecta of different possibilities that can be enabled with some of these new capabilities, and then there's a lot of technical capabilities that fall underneath that umbrella to be able to enable you to you have remote Salesforce maybe to be able to VPN into your cloud infrastructure. So a lot of other capabilities to really allow you to extend and creatively enable some capability for a workload that typical enterprise might need.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So essentially, it's a platform that I can develop on, and I can extend via VMs, and that content is deliverable to people on my local network as well as external folks, correct?
You got it. Yep. Yeah, and you have control over making that available to external folks. Some customers are a little bit more sensitive about having a virtual IP address or something is publicly accessible, maybe a virtual machine housing customer data, for instance. So customers have control over, what type of visibility they want to publicly expose, those particular workloads. So there's a lot of granular control over that.
Yeah.
Really, well, the thing that's interesting to me about all this is customers are in a better position to really make the determination of what business do I want to be in. And, if they don't want to be in the infrastructure business and they don't want to man a data center or, they don't want to get too deep in owning all the parts of the development platform, they can really pick and choose. I mean, the control is completely in the customer's hands now. So, if you think about software as a service or platform as a service or infrastructure as a service, these buzzwords have been floating around for a while, but now they're really, I think, really starting to hit home. If you just want to consume software, there's a lot of software as a service solutions out there. And you're basically a consumer with a very small investment, and you can focus on other things core to your business. If you want to develop a platform and build applications on Azure, you can do that as well. And it really abstracts a lot of the infrastructure that you might normally have to invest in and be responsible for, but you're still, in control of the code. Or, if you want to extend your infrastructure, that's fine too. If you want to put it up in Azure, great. If you want to just extend the infrastructure on premises, that's fine. You can have any combination, any scenario here. So it's completely up to you. What business do you want to be in? How much of an investment do you want to make? And if that changes, which, we're changing at a pace now faster than ever, you're still in control of that too. Ramp up, ramp down, whatever makes sense for you.
Yep, and that's a good point. And one thing about that notion of choice is that there's a lot of competitors in the infrastructure as a service space specifically, and we allow customers to carry forward virtualized workloads into Azure, and at a later date, if they want to bring them back on premises, that's a possibility. Our technology permits and in fact actually encourages customers to be able to make that cognizant choice, maybe using Azure for burst scenarios, maybe around holiday season when they, maybe if they have an e-commerce site and they want to be able to have capacity for Black Friday, that's an option that they have available to be able to spin up virtual machines in Azure and tear them down, running in Azure in addition to on-premise, and then, tear down those VMs running in Azure, when that traffic subsides. So that's absolutely some possibilities that they have with our platform.
Yeah. Cool. So I hear we did some really cool things around Christmas with Azure.
Yeah, that's a great example. I mean, we can sit here and talk about technology all day, but what really tends to hit home is real examples. So, one that was very visible, I think, over the last holiday period was the NORAD Track Santa project. So you probably saw this. If you're watching the news at all, it was covered in just about every media outlet. Everybody tracks what's going on with Santa, and NORAD's been doing this for years and years. But it's gotten a lot more high-tech now, so that you don't just hear about it on the news. People want to get involved, and they want to be a part of it, via their mobile devices or via browsers or whatever platform it might be. So it was a pretty ambitious project this last time around. This was actually done using a lot of the technologies on Azure. And the deal is you've got 48 hours to do this worldwide event. It starts from the time Santa takes off, and it's a very short cycle to run a project, make sure nothing goes wrong, and scale at an unbelievably high rate. So we're talking about 48 hours. We're going to touch 22 million people. And in that period of time, you've got essentially a website and a back-end infrastructure that has to ramp from 16,000 hits to like 91 million page views. This is an incredibly busy site. And if you think about trying to build out the infrastructure to scale to this kind of demand from almost nothing to huge loads of volume, you got to be able to quickly scale, you got to be able to handle it, you got to be able to work across the world. And you've got all these different devices out there, tablets, Win8 machines, you've got every popular browser that's out there, iPhones, Windows phones. it's got to work across all this stuff. So you need back-end infrastructure that can serve data to these as well. So that was a really exciting project. Thought it went up really well, and it's just a great example of kind of the burst scenarios where you might have something that the rest of the year you don't want to invest a ton of money in, but for a few days it's the most important thing that you do. So you know, Azure's a great fit for that. Burst scenarios are one of the, you know, the key drivers for customers to move apps out there. There's a lot of other really cool scenarios as well, but that's one probably, you know, you all took part of, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was awesome. Reed, I think you've got some websites you want to show us, some real-world examples.
Yeah, so just a couple of common places you might want to go to. If you're thinking about Azure or just getting started, there's a couple of common places where customers can get some information that's really helpful. So let me switch over real quick, and I'll just show you a couple of these. You can get to them on the public web. And I'll talk you through this, and it's something everybody needs to know if you're getting started. And then I'll shift back to Ryan, and he's going to show you some interesting innards, I guess, of Windows Azure. So if you start using Windows Azure, and a couple of things that come up very commonly, you know, customers at this point are very commonly wanting to know, you know, what's the health of our infrastructure out there or a particular service? And it's a little different model now where you were in control of everything before. Now you rely on Microsoft to control pieces and parts of it for you. So if there's an issue, if there's a performance fluke or something that's going on, and the question becomes, well, is this my issue or is this Microsoft? Is there anything going on with Azure? A common place that you can go look is this Windows Azure Service Dashboard. This is a public site that you can go to, and you can filter down by all the features that Azure has, and in particular regions. And right now, like if you look at this, everything's green, and that's a beautiful site. We hope it always stays there. But you know, if I scroll down here a little bit, you'll see one of these icons lit up, and this is just in a management portal. So there's some type of issue going on here. It looks like a minor issue, but if you hover over this, you can actually kind of scroll down and see what's going on. So we have people monitoring just about every aspect of our Azure infrastructure 24/7. If something goes wrong, they're typically on it and working on it. But you know, every Premier customer or you know any customer out there using Azure, they kind of want to know what's going on too. Even if we're working on it, you want to know what the status is. So you can hover into these areas and kind of see an updated breakdown of what's happening, where we're at, and just follow what's going on. So if you see that, hey, this looks like it's something Microsoft's on top of, you can just monitor this. If you don't see any issues here and it looks like everything's green, then it could be something with maybe an application that you've got or something in your VM, something unique to you. So that's probably a good time to call support. On that same note, there's also an Azure support site here that breaks down the different options of support available. And you'll see that there's several different tiers of support provided to Azure. And really, we come in at every price point, at every relationship that you could really want, down to kind of just free community work, all the way up through a kind of an email-based developer relationship. And then the area, of course, that Lex and Ryan and I work in the Premier space, which is really kind of high touch, a lot of guidance, critical situation management, where we're really embedded in your business and we're there to help you succeed, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. It's probably beyond this conversation. But a lot of you are familiar with Premier, and it's a great offering. But here's a couple places to get more information about the different tiers. One other place I want to show you is this Windows Azure Trust Center. And this is the other, I think, hot topic area as customers begin to step into the cloud with any vendor. And those are the questions around security and compliance and where's my data and what certifications do you have, and all the questions that come up around security. How can I do penetration testing? So this is a kind of a catch-all place to start with, and if you go up into the Windows Azure Trust Center, just about every fact based on security and compliance and what we have as part of Azure is documented up here. So I encourage customers to start here, read through the data that's out there, because it'll answer a lot of your questions. So these are all great sites, information on support, the Windows Azure Service Dashboard, and the Windows Azure Trust Center. All good places to get started. And then, of course, you know, MSDN, great place to get started with Windows Azure Guidance. There's a ton of information out there.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Reed. That's some very useful and worthwhile information. I thought we'd take a step into Azure for those of you who maybe have not yet explored what the Azure portal looks like. I'm actually logged into my Azure subscription here, and I can actually see all the individual services that I have deployed in my Azure subscription, inclusive of applications that I've deployed. And I can also see what types of virtual machines that I had deployed in my Azure subscriptions. And at this point, in the particular subscription I'm viewing right now, I don't actually have any particular virtual machines running, but I'm going to go ahead and show you really how easy it is to create one leveraging our gallery of virtual machines. So when I hit the Create New VM option, it's asking me for some DNS name. Taysa Premier is going to do a check and actually see that that particular DNS name is available. And then you actually pick from a library of particular images that some have software pre-installed. And the benefit of this is that from a licensing standpoint, you can actually run a production workload in Windows Azure and actually pay in a per minute usage, pay per minute of the particular component or Azure or Windows server application that you actually want to make use of. So you can see from this library, there's SQL Server, BizTalk, even Visual Studio Preview. So if you are interested in experimenting with Visual Studio 2013 and maybe don't want to install it on your primary developer desktop, you can actually spin up a virtual machine in Azure and experiment and kick the tires with it. I'm going to go ahead and pick Windows Server 2012 R2. And I can type in a username. Actually, it's not going to let me pick admin. So I'm going to put in my super secret password. And I pick looks like my password did not match. And then I pick a region where I actually want to deploy this particular virtual machine. So you can see the particular data centers that my subscription is associated with, both in Europe as well as in the U.S. I'm just going to go ahead and pick the Eastern U.S. and click OK. And this, lo and behold, Azure is actually provisioning a virtual machine for me. I can actually drill into it and remote desktop into it, install software to it, and actually connect to it as if it were a VM that I had running on-premise, and I can make use of some other capabilities of Azure, such as virtual networking, where I can actually extend my on-premise corporate network into Azure and be able to communicate with these servers as if it were running out of my own data center. So, a common question that comes up to from customers, especially with applications they've deployed in Azure, is what they can do or what they can leverage to actually monitor that particular application. There's actually something I'll go ahead and highlight here. It's actually called Metrics Hub. It's a company that we acquired around the February timeframe, and it's actually free. So if you deploy an application workload into Windows Azure, this is actually a great way that you can set up alerts, for particular CPU thresholds, or maybe if you have an e-commerce application, when your order pipeline or order queue hits some certain thresholds, you can actually have it proactively alert. Based on pager rotation type of a schedule, you can actually have it notify the person or persons who's on call to be able to look in and troubleshoot what's going on with your application. Also, there's some capabilities in Metrics Hub that was actually now been carried forward into the Azure portal. So if I actually go into one of my applications here, this is actually some preview capability in Windows Azure that's really cool. That so picture an application you have deployed, maybe one or two web servers initially. You send out some tweet or post something on a social network that you're running a sale, and all of a sudden your site is just inundated with traffic. So typically you have to you trigger some sort of alert. Somebody would have to respond to that alert and actually log into a portal or leverage some scripts to actually spin up additional server capacity. What you can actually do is have Azure schedule to increase capacity to be able to accommodate load that's coming in or traffic that's coming into your application. So you can set up some predetermined date and time that you want to actually spin up those virtual machines, or you can actually do it by CPU. So maybe you have a bunch of servers running in Azure, and when the CPUs start running hot, you can have Azure actually automatically spin up additional instances to be able to handle the load coming in. So it's some really cool capability in Azure. And I thought I'd take another minute here and just show you, from an economic standpoint. I mean, if you picture in the traditional on-premise space, that if you're building server infrastructure to be able to, typically, that's a horrible line here, but typically, this is actually, your the peak load that you have to design your infrastructure to be able to accommodate, some particular load. But that might be some, once or twice a year, or maybe a couple times a month that you hit this particular peak load. So if you think about it, all of this capacity that you have spun up in your data center is actually wasted, energy, wasted, costs and cooling, wasted, resources to be able to patch and manage additional capacity that's just sitting there, largely idle, waiting just for those peaks of your particular, business or, seasonality and of the type of business that you happen to work in. So, Azure is something that can help flatten out those costs and really take, this operating expense that you have to incur to be able to stand up servers and have people involved and actually wiring up and racking those servers and moving that into a an operating expense where you're actually just paying for the capacity you need at any given point in time.
Wow.
So with that, yeah.
No, that's cool. That's really cool. So let me ask you a question real quick. One of the things that I think I got out of this is that we can automatically spawn VMs on an as-needed basis. You can set a threshold, and if we cross that threshold, we can spawn another VM or spawn another machine to handle, like, let's say, load, like you just showed us in the peak load drawing there in Paint.
Yep.
So no interaction on our part, right? We get to that peak load spot, we spawn up another Azure instance. What happens when that instance is spun up and then load drops? Is there a scenario or a trigger for, hey, I needed that for a little while, but I don't need it now, so let's reduce the number of VMs that are dedicated to this? I mean, I know we can grow on demand. Can we shrink on demand, or can we shrink based on load?
Absolutely. If I scroll down just a little bit more in this screen here in my subscription, you can see here that I can actually indicate how many instances I want to scale. So maybe, maybe I need to, my scale unit requires me to add two servers, for as load increases to be able to handle capacity. But then I can have it dwell for a certain period of time and actually scale it back down. And I can also designate how many instances I want to scale it back down to. So, once my CPU thresholds or queue thresholds is the other option here. Once those thresholds are traffic drops below those particular defined thresholds, after a certain period of time, it will just reduce the number of instances that are running. So, completely automatic, no action required, nobody having to babysit your environment. It just kind of just goes along with the self-healing nature of the public cloud computing. And could potentially be looked at as kind of a hands-off environment. Once you have an application deployed.
That's freaking awesome. That's pretty cool.
It's amazing too. If you think about all the expense and cost that goes into building these redundant systems in your own data center. I mean, just to stand up a bunch of web servers and load balance them, or a redundant SQL system, you can spend a ton of money doing this. And what's interesting again is that you have such ease and control of spinning this stuff up, spinning it down, and it enables some interesting scenarios too. So for instance, I'm a developer and I'm pretty passionate about development, and my development brothers out there will know that there are times where you get these great ideas that you want to prove something out and you need some hardware to do it, and it's tough. Like in some big organizations, it can take weeks or months If you're lucky enough to get hardware provisioned, you know, to get it allocated, somebody to pay for it, to get the images spun up, to get access to it, or, you know, if you're lucky enough to have like a QA or test environment that mirrors production, that's another thing that's highly in demand. You often have to share with other groups. So Azure enables some scenarios where you can just spin this stuff up. You know, if you need to reproduce a production problem or test something new and test out a new idea, you can spin these environments up, do what you need to do, and spin them down. And they're not sitting down in the data center all year long. You're not you don't have to share one deployment with all these other groups. And it's just really powerful. It enables you to be very efficient. Or, you know, some great scenarios we're seeing, too, are startups. So in the past, you know, if you had a great idea, you had to go out and get a lot of venture capital to buy the hardware to prove all this stuff out and then hope that you had a model that could support that as you grew and really got successful or got money behind you. And something like Azure gives the ability to, at a very low cost, put an idea out there. And then as you start to make money out of it, or if it starts to grow and demand picks up, you just scale along with it. So if you're a guy out there with a great idea, it's a very good time to be in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to go back to reiterate the point you talked about being able to rapidly spin up an environment, the VM that I'd spun up before I started talking is actually up and running. So really that quick, you know, the VM's been provisioned, it's been assigned an IP address, it's actually, you know, been imaged with a particular bits that that I selected when I you know, pick what flavor operating system I want to have deployed. And, you know, lo and behold, it's actually running as a virtual machine that I can now connect to. So it's you know, really straightforward and easy. You know, in the typical enterprise space that Reed and I work in, you know, this is something that, you know, traditionally might have taken, you know, weeks or months to actually go through all the processes and, you know, bureaucratic red tape to actually get stood up. So it's, you know, we're very much bringing that agility to the likes of the typical enterprise to be able to do things rapidly and efficiently.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool, guys. Thank you so much for showing us that. Wow, that's some cool stuff, man. That was awesome. That's really neat. So, hey, by the way, I've got a new marketing idea. Check it out. Nice Lex, Evil Lex. Nice Lex, Evil Lex. We could get the guy from like the ShamWow commercials. You know, do you have to deliver bad news to somebody?
We need a pitch man.
Yeah, we need a pitch man.
You should incorporate that in the rest of your sessions and do, you know, a perspective from both angles, the positive one and the critical one.
Oh, yeah, there you go, positive and negative. Yeah, so that's pretty funny. So thanks again, guys. You know, I can't thank you enough for doing this. This has actually been very, very, very informative. So if I'm a customer and I'm listening to this, where can I go to get more information about Azure? I know you guys mentioned it before, but I want to get you to mention it one more time.
Yeah, thanks, Lex. If you want to see some more information about what we talked about today or open up a trial subscription to be able to experiment and kick the tires with Windows Azure, if you go to windowsazure.com, it's actually your one-stop shopping place for a lot of stuff Reed talked about. It's also the spot where you can go to be able to see some of the subscription management related things that I showcased. And it will also provide a link to some resources where you can go to be able to obtain some additional resources on our support offerings that, you know, Reed briefly touched upon as well.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I'd like to thank everybody that tuned in and helped us kick off Season 3 of Taste of Premier. We've got a little treat for you at the end of this, a little Super Drummer clip. Thanks again, and that's your Taste of Premier.